If there's nothing further, once again, we're delighted to have Brother Allen with us. The title of his discourse tonight is "The Sky Is Falling." The sky is falling, Brother Allen.
Well, you recognize the saying, I'm sure. It's about a character in fictitious literature called Chicken Little who thought the sky was falling. And, of course, that's been the butt of many jokes. But we'd like to present it from a different point of view. Perhaps you might even say we're going to vindicate Chicken Little here this evening. Now, I know we like to focus on the positive. And when we think about the truth and we think about the kingdom, we like to think about all the nice things. But it's also important for us to think about some of the difficulties that are involved in the time of trouble. And we need to be aware of the trouble. We need to be aware of the silver lining that is contained in that trouble. We need to have a healthy awareness of the threats and the dangers that we face. And that's true in a lot of different ways, but we're going to be focusing on one particular aspect of that. So essentially what we're trying to say is that we think Chicken Little was right. He was just ahead of his time. The sky is falling. Or if we want to put it more in scriptural terminology, in the words of the Apostle Paul, the heavens are on fire. And brethren, I think that sometimes you and I have felt the heat. And I think the heat is being turned up and we're feeling it more and more. Now, perhaps the thought goes through our minds. The brethren have been saying for a long time that the end is near. In fact, you know, our generation and our time period is not the only one that's done that. Even in the days of the apostles, they were expecting that it was near. But one thing is for sure, it's certainly nearer now than it's ever been before. Now, we could be wrong. Things might last longer than what we expect them to. But it's less likely today that we're wrong on this point than it has been in the past. I believe that evidences abound that the end is near. Now, because the world, because the brethren have heard this concept so often, there is a danger that we could grow numb on this point. And I believe that the Lord has permitted this as somewhat of a test. It kind of goes along with the test of time. The time has drawn out so long since 1914, and it's a real test of patience. And we have heard different brethren who have given different dates over the years, and we're not criticizing that, but you know there were expectations in 1874, 1878, 1881, 1914, 1918, 1925, 1954. You know, the list goes on and on. But one of these days, brethren, it's going to happen. And we need to be aware of that. We believe that this is a process, and it's a process that cannot be reversed. And that process carries with it a death sentence for the present order, and it also carries a death sentence for us. And that's a sobering thought. And we consecrated unto death, but one of these days, that's going to happen for all of us. Perhaps it'll be in a natural way. Perhaps not. Of course, death is never natural, but you know what I mean. Are we prepared for this? What are the practical consequences of thinking along these lines? The fact that we are going to need to face our death at some point, and it may be sooner rather than later. We gave our all in consecration. The question is, how much of it are we really willing to give? Now, you may remember that thought. It's kind of a paraphrase of an expression we find in Volume 1, the last chapter, Concluding Thoughts. And there, Brother Russell raises this question. You know, we were very zealous at the beginning of our walk. We want to be sure that we continue to have that zeal, that we don't lose any of that first love. It's very possible within the next few years, perhaps longer, we're not setting any dates, that each of us will be faced with this question in ways perhaps that we have never experienced before. And we believe that in some ways these events have already begun. It will test the depths of our consecration in ways perhaps that we have never experienced before. And so there's a number of questions it's valuable for us to ask ourselves. How would we fare if the Lord took everything away from us? Everything. We know we gave everything to the Lord in consecration, but it's good to think about these things sometimes in a practical way. Are we truly prepared for the answer to that? It's this question and its answer that is the main subject for the lesson we want to share with you today. When we look at the seventh stage of the church, what do we find described in the Scriptures? And I'm thinking particularly in the book of Revelation, the Laodicean period. It's described in what way? It's described as a period that has great temporal abundance. But it's not necessarily abundant in spiritual ways, because there are dangers with unprecedented abundance. And the time in which we are living, we believe that these are evidences of the presence of our Lord. And that's a very positive thing. But on the other hand, these temporal privileges, the abundance that we've been given in a temporal way, provide a peculiar temptation for the Laodicean period. I'm not being critical. That's not the purpose of this. And we're not trying to point the finger at anybody. We're just trying to state the facts. Because along with these circumstances, there come these special dangers and the necessity for being aware of it. But brethren, we believe that the level of abundance in the United States sometimes borders on the obscene. I don't believe that's an exaggeration. And really, it's not possible for us to fully appreciate that unless we have seen by contrast places where that's not the case. It's only if we are comparing ourselves to our poor cousins in the third world that we can begin to see the true picture. The vast majority of the world, more than 90% of people, live at a subsistence level. The dangers from this abundance that surrounds us are far greater than the dangers of persecution. And we believe that the greatest danger for us as Christians, and that's the part we want to focus on, the danger for us would be an unconscious dependence on this level of abundance. And we believe that the Lord is allowing this test not only in the United States, but we're beginning to experience it in Romania as well. Even though Romania is pretty much just a developing country, the tests are beginning there. And brethren, I sincerely believe that the tests of liberty and abundance are far greater than what they had under communism. The impending collapse of the present civilization is something that is not only seen by Bible students, but it is something that's being recognized more and more by worldly experts. The reasons behind this collapse were foretold in the Scriptures. They were foretold in the Harvest Message. And we believe that Brother Russell, by the Lord's grace, was more than a century ahead of his time. We've been studying personally Volume 4, and it was just recently translated, a new translation in the Romanian language, and so we're very conscious of Volume 4 right now. We're studying it in class in Sighet. And I'm deeply impressed with the foresight that Brother Russell had. And his purposes for giving that volume, the material in that volume, the principles still apply to our day. And if anything, they are more appropriate today than when it was first written. Brother Russell is trying to present a case. He is trying to give expert testimony from people from a variety of sources, whether it's religious experts, whether it's financial experts or political experts. And he's presenting that expert testimony to us in order to make a point. And his point is the same point that we're trying to underline here this evening. He expected that things would end sooner than what it has turned out to be. But if anything, we are the ones who benefit the most from what he has written there. We cannot afford to skip over the quoted material, especially in our personal study, because the principles that are contained there are very timely. And so we need to ask ourselves if we're willing to put in the time and the effort to go through that. It's a very helpful exercise. We believe that the harvest message in particular has a special member, a special message for those of us who are not only the feet members, but we would even say the heel members. We think that we're reaching that point. It is only the wise virgins who will be able fully to benefit from this knowledge and information. What is contained in that portion of the harvest message, we believe, is a warning of a disease that pervades our society. And it also contains a prescription for the cure. And this is based on the scriptures. The present social arrangement cannot be healed. In fact, the prescription given by our returned Lord is not designed to cure the present social arrangement. It's not designed to cure the status quo, but rather it's designed to destroy it. And why is that? It's because the present social arrangement is the disease. You can't cure it. It has to be gotten rid of. And so we need to keep that in mind. What's the danger? The danger is if we become dependent on the present social arrangement. That means we become dependent on the disease. That's a very bad position to be in. So the bigger question for us is, are we prepared for the cure? And it's good for us to think about that from a practical standpoint. So we want to give you some theoretical scenarios. And these would be in keeping with the general way that Brother Russell presents information in the fourth volume. But we just want to bring it up to date in some ways. And to show how much things have progressed in the last 100-plus years. What are some theoretical scenarios that are today a very real possibility that were pointed to by Brother Russell in the fourth volume and in other places? Consider one. Total global financial collapse. Now, Brother Russell expected that the financial system would collapse. But what does that mean in a real standpoint? What would that mean on a day-to-day basis? It's good to think about that. Global interdependency on a financial level is stronger today than it has ever been before in history. The whole world is tied together. If there is a drop in the dollar in one country, it just ripples across the whole face of the globe. This is part of God's arrangement for making what the scriptures call a short work in this trouble. And so from that standpoint, it actually is a feature of God's mercy. And He's gathering them together. He's gathering them together, of course, it says in Scriptures, to the Valley of Jehoshaphat is one expression. He's gathering them together to Armageddon is another expression. But it's also that He can pour upon them His fierce indignation. And He will, by so doing, be able to make a short work of it. Now, it's a fact of economical life, we believe, that the world economy is dependent on the U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar falls, the world economy falls with it. The euro was originally welcomed as a possible alternative, but its popularity, though very great at the beginning, has in more recent times fallen off. It was short-lived and artificial. It was built more on hopes than on substance. In fact, the European economy is still largely a child of the U.S. economy. It is very unlikely that the European Union or any other marketplace is going to be able to supplant the role of the United States. Now, we're not saying it can't happen, but it's very unlikely. We don't think that there's enough time for that to happen. And besides, we believe that the world economy is already too fragile to produce any kind of a new parent economy. Brother Russell saw this general scenario more than 100 years ago, and he predicted that the financial systems would fail. And in fact, we do believe that the steps began to be put in place more than 100 years ago, and we're beginning to see the pace quicken in this arrangement in this slow collapse, but it is going faster today. The financial collapse is inevitable. It is merely a question of time. The U.S. dollar and every other currency in the world is wholly dependent on public confidence alone. There's no substance to it whatsoever. And public confidence is an extremely volatile thing. And we've seen examples of this over the years. We believe that the three frogs of Revelation 16, are croaking desperately in order to uphold the status quo. And a relatively small incident could start a catastrophic chain of events. To put the matter in other words, we think that gasoline is already poured over the paper currency of the world and is just merely waiting for someone to strike the match. What does this mean in a practical way? Now, we look back at recent history, last 100 years, and we do find there that there were millions who lost everything in the Great Depression. And so someone might say, well, we've been through this before. We got through the Great Depression. We can get through another financial collapse. I don't think so. The same level of financial collapse today could not be met with the same kind of response as in the Great Depression. The circumstances of today are widely different. Society's not so friendly today as it was back then. People were more accustomed to taking in friends and relatives. People were more willing and able to reduce their standard of living. Certain necessities that we have today were not even in existence back then, and they weren't practical necessities then. Credit card debt, other kinds of debt, didn't even exist in those days. The climate of society was not so self-serving as it is today. All of those are factors that point to a financial collapse that would have much more dire consequences in our time. Society today is much more dependent in this country on the government itself. Social services largely did not exist in the Great Depression. In fact, it was a result of the Great Depression that many of them were added. And they could be added because they didn't exist. But you can't add them because they're already there. The largest single segment of today's government debt is already tied to various social programs. Now, there is an interesting parallel, and we don't have time to go into it, but the French Revolution is a very complicated scenario on the pages of history. And has a lot more to do with financial problems in some ways than it did with political. But we can't go into that at this time. We believe the future financial collapse will be much more severe than the Great Depression. Now, many brethren are accustomed to living in this opulent lifestyle that surrounds us, particularly in the United States and other developed countries. And again, we're not criticizing that. There's nothing wrong with being surrounded by it, but it is wrong if we allow the wrong influences to enter into our own lives. And this can very easily happen unawares. It is not a criticism, it is merely raising a level of awareness, raising an alarm. We don't want to let our stewardship go to waste. My mother was not a Bible student. She's not in the truth. But she had some very interesting sayings that she would give from time to time. And she tried to put these in practice, and one of them was along these lines. She would often say, "Do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going." And you know, there's some real good advice contained there. Brother Russell said that in one place that it would be a sin for a Christian to die rich. Well, it depends on what you consider rich and depends on the circumstances. We can't judge others. But we do want to look at ourselves, and we want to ask ourselves, are we laying up riches for future generations? Or are we trying to use our stewardship to the best of our ability while we have the ability to do that? We don't want to become too comfortable, even with what the world considers a normal lifestyle. Because normal is going to go away, if it hasn't already begun to go away in many places, that concept of normal. We're living in a time of great uncertainty. We're living in a day when many of the things that were taken for granted only 10 or 20 years ago are no longer a sure thing. So, from a practical standpoint, what if your job and all prospects for future employment disappeared? No hope for having a means of gaining an income. What would that mean in a practical sense? What if your retirement funds or your investments for the future suddenly disappeared, evaporated? Now, what would that mean? What would you do without money? What would you do without a government safety net? If our understanding is correct, we believe that the trouble will become life-threatening for millions. Now, I don't believe that there's going to be a large number of the world's population that are going to die in the time of trouble. Although we could look back at the last century and say there were significant numbers, and we expect there will still be significant numbers. Our bread and water is sure, according to the scriptures, but that has not always been true in a literal sense. There have been brethren who have starved to death by the Lord's permission. Now, we're not trying to frighten the brethren, but it would be dangerously negligent if we failed to say something along these lines and to be aware ourselves of what the future may hold. Let's consider another scenario. And again, these all have to do with basic ways in which the social structure could come to a crashing end. The loss of the healthcare system. Global vulnerability is higher today than it has ever been before in history. Now, this is also part of God's arrangement for making a short work of the time of trouble. The unprecedented running to and fro has also allowed for the unprecedented spread of all kinds of things, including disease. Careless use of medicines has made the global population even more vulnerable. Circumstances have opened up a real threat of biological terrorism. Biological weapons are now available to terrorist groups, and health service agencies worldwide are not prepared or equipped to deal with a terrorist attack against their facilities. These are many different ways in which this could happen. All of these factors, however, spell disaster. Even in just a natural way, what we call natural. The recent news this year was the fear of bird flu becoming a pandemic. Now, it doesn't have to be bird flu. It can be any other kind of influenza. There have been pandemics in the past, and another one is inevitable. All the experts are saying that. But a simple pandemic of influenza could overwhelm the world healthcare system. Ever-increasing natural disasters have already overloaded the system at times, regionally. What would happen in a truly large-scale disaster on more of a global basis? This is an accident that is waiting to happen. Some diseases that were once thought to be eradicated are making a comeback, again because of the careless use of antibiotics and other medicines. Tuberculosis is one recent example of this. This is something they thought they'd conquered, and unfortunately it is making a comeback. There's no second chance to eradicate these diseases. All this sounds like, it's gloom and doom. Well, it is, but we have a hope, and we don't want to forget that hope. So we're going through all this negative stuff. Don't become overly discouraged, brethren. We want to remember that silver lining, but we want to have a healthy awareness of the way things could go. Even if the threat was not something that affects a large segment of the world's population, a single terrorist incident of biological terrorism could create panic on a worldwide basis, in addition to the immediate deaths that would be caused by such an event. Greedy corporations have become addicted to ever-increasing prices for health care. That's particularly true in this country. They are killing the goose that lays the golden eggs. Socialized medicine in the United States is no longer a viable possibility or practical solution. The United States government is not capable of taking over this problem. There's not enough money in the U.S. economy to pay for the current price tag. And it keeps going higher. there will be an inevitable reduction in the level of healthcare services. And in fact, that's already started. This is already a fact of life for millions of Americans. I don't know what the most recent statistic is, but something like 20 million Americans can't afford health insurance at all. So what does this mean? Millions of U.S. citizens can no longer afford to live, and millions of U.S. citizens can no longer afford to die. A more serious prospect is the loss, in whole or in part, of the current health care system. How could this happen? Well, a number of ways. Financial collapse, mentioned in the previous section, could also bring down the health care system. Anarchy would certainly bring down whatever would remain of the healthcare system. But what does this mean in a practical way? Regardless of how it might be brought about, what would it mean to you and I on a daily basis? Take something as simple as the loss or the lack of prescription drugs. How many brethren do you know of, or how many people do you know of, friends and neighbors, that are dependent on prescription drugs? We take it for granted because it's available. You go to the store, you can get it. How long can a diabetic live without insulin? How long can a stroke patient live without blood thinners or someone who's had certain kinds of surgeries? How long can a person with congestive heart failure live without diuretics? And the list goes on and on. How many brethren, how many of your friends, neighbors, do you know that are being kept alive with prescription medication? Then there's the loss or the lack of emergency medical facilities. How many medical facilities would remain open if they couldn't pay their bills? How many of them would be willing to continue functioning if they couldn't make money off of it? Unfortunately, because medicine is a big business today, many of they're not interested just in the public well-being. Of course, there are always exceptions. But how many people, including brethren, would die if emergency rooms suddenly started to close or turned away anybody who couldn't pay them cash? How many people, including brethren, would die if treatable conditions suddenly became untreatable? We have been lulled into a false sense of security that the healthcare system is capable of fixing anything that gets broken in a physical way. But the more serious problem is if the healthcare system itself gets broken. It reminds us of the scripture, "Physician, heal thyself." And they are capable of doing that. Are we prepared for this possibility? And again, it's one of many scenarios, and we think that they're all related. Another major point, absence of a functional government. Now, some might say that we've already reached this point. And that's true to a large extent. It's part of the process. Special interests have compromised the integrity of virtually all public figures. And someone might say, you don't have to use the word virtually. Government by the people and for the people is now an idea that only exists on paper. Serving the best interests of the people is seldom the top priority. Those appointed to high offices, consequently, frequently are there because of political favors or some other influence, and not because they're qualified for the job. And we've seen this. We've seen this recently. Hurricane Katrina was only a small example of some of these problems in action. There was a tremendous impact by that one single natural disaster. What if an even bigger natural disaster struck? There are a number that are long overdue. What about a major earthquake? Now, usually when you think of a major earthquake, you think about California sliding into the Pacific Ocean. But perhaps many of you know the strongest earthquake that ever occurred in the United States was in Missouri, in what's called the New Madrid Fault. Well, that fault line, if there was another earthquake of the same magnitude as the one that occurred in the 1850s, it would cause catastrophic damage to Memphis, Nashville, and St. Louis, places like Kansas City, Louisville, Cincinnati, even Chicago would be affected. The amount of property damage alone could destroy the United States economy from just one earthquake of that magnitude. The immediate loss of life could be in the tens of thousands or more. The long-term effects would be even more severe. The destruction of infrastructure and basic services could bring more loss of life. The seeds of anarchy could quickly sprout under such conditions. And this is not a fanciful story that we're making up, because we saw how the reaction was in Katrina. We saw how things resulted there. One of the most active volcanic regions in the world is in the Northwest United States. Mount St. Helens was a relatively small example of what could happen. The levels of activity in that area have increased measurably over a wide area in recent years. Yellowstone National Park is a huge volcano that is several hundred miles in circumference. And it's like a bubble that's waiting to pop. And the levels of activity there have increased dramatically in recent years. We're only mentioning these as possibilities. We don't know. We're not making predictions. Now, here's one that is a really impending possibility. And that would be a hurricane hitting Long Island. And perhaps you've heard some reports about this. Even just a Category 3 hurricane hitting Long Island could result in a major catastrophe. There have been hurricanes in that region in the past. The vulnerability today is much greater than at any period in previous history, and the likelihood today is perhaps the highest that it has ever been. The number and the intensity of hurricanes in the last decade has increased dramatically. This is not just an isolated incident concerning last year's hurricane season. Ocean temperatures worldwide are rising. Global warming is a real thing. They're no longer trying to deny that this is just playing with statistics. Natural disasters are only one of several mechanisms that could result in the collapse of current governments. We already mentioned financial collapse. We mentioned terrorism and disease. These are all known possibilities. What about the ones that we don't know about, the ones that come as surprises? All of these could result in the destruction of government as we know it. What are the practical realities of this? Try to imagine not having any support from any government agency. Try to imagine being strictly on your own from an earthly perspective. Try to imagine all of this under very trying circumstances. You can't call the police. You can't call the fire department. You can't call the rescue squad. You probably don't even have a functioning phone system. You may not have water or electricity. You might find it difficult or impossible to obtain enough food to survive. Are these all just fanciful ideas? No. These are practical realities, and they were experienced by millions of people in the New Orleans area. And this could happen on a larger scale. The question for us is, if we happen to be surrounded by these circumstances, will the naked principles of truth and righteousness still rule in our lives under such conditions? Will we be able to continue to trust God come what may, not only for ourselves, but also for our loved ones? And you know, sometimes it's more difficult to trust God for our loved ones than it is to trust Him for ourselves. In summary and in conclusion, you probably recognize a quote, some of you recognize a quote, "The times, they are changing." Remember who said it? Bob Dylan. That tells you where I come from. 30 years ago, we used to sit around and we used to speculate. How could anarchy possibly overwhelm the United States? We couldn't think of a scenario in which this was possible. Today, that's no longer the question. Now the question is, which one? Which one of these many possibilities could bring it to pass? Yes, Chicken Little will someday be vindicated. The sky really is going to fall. The end really is going to come. And if our observations are correct, we believe that process has already started. The question for each of us individually is, will I be ready? And can I help others to be ready? Whether that's our brethren, whether that's those in the world around us. We need to pay attention, lest, as the Apostle Paul says, and as our Lord Jesus says, perhaps in different words, but the concept the same, lest that day come upon you unawares. We need to be prepared for what will happen. Theoretical knowledge is, through study, a first and an important step. Mental appreciation of what this means is a further necessary step. Trusting in the promises of God is an important exercise. But practical application is going to be the final test. Will our faith be able to survive? Will our new creature be able to rejoice in the demise of the old man? By whatever means, the Lord may permit that to come to pass. Dear brethren, let us continue to pray, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, no matter what the personal cost may be to us. If we truly gave our all in consecration, we will be prepared. If you've given everything up, you've got nothing to lose. Men's hearts are failing them for fear as they see these things that are coming upon the earth. More and more, they are beginning to realize that there's no way out. They have to reach that point. The Lord has to bring them to that point so that they can turn to Him. But for us, we have a different perspective. We can lift up our heads. We can rejoice. We don't rejoice in the trouble. We don't rejoice in the suffering. But we rejoice because our deliverance draweth nigh. And our deliverance means the deliverance of the whole groaning creation. It would be a bittersweet victory at best if only we were delivered, such as the nominal church concept portrays. No, we can only rejoice because this deliverance is going to come to all. The current clouds of trouble are the sure forerunner of the glories to follow. And we trust that the Lord will not permit any more suffering for ourselves or for the world of mankind than what is absolutely necessary. Dear brethren, let's close with the reading of the 46th Psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. And we're seeing that around us, aren't we, brethren? We're seeing that shaking. We're seeing the mountains being cast into the midst of the sea. And he continues in verse 4, there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early in the morning. The heathen raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And then the scenario changes to the results, the after results of the time of trouble. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. What kind of desolations? The psalmist goes on to describe them. These are nice desolations. He maketh wars to cease unto the ends of the earth. He breaketh the bow. He cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. And the final verse repeats verse 7. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Amen.